pulse of the background screening industry. Brought to you by iCubed Advisors.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another iCubed webinar. We are just going to warm up here for a few minutes while everybody gets into Zoom. Thank you so much. As ever, we always say, you're busy, we're busy, we're also busy. So thank you for taking your time on this lovely Tuesday to join us chatting a little bit about Q1 in our industry and what that means for the look ahead. So Kevin, how about some nice banter before we get started?
Yeah, we always like to talk about books. It's been a while since we did our last one.
Well, why don't we talk about the biggest book of them all? Nick Fishman's joining us now.
The biggest book of all.
Biggest book.
I don't know.
It's already tough enough getting his head to fit inside the Zoom screen here.
I know.
Webinar Nick has joined us today.
Literally or figuratively, Kevin?
I'm reading, I just finished The Premonition by Michael Lewis. And somebody had a good saying about Michael Lewis. I don't remember who it was, but they're like, if he wrote a book on the history of the stapler, I would read it.
Yeah.
Michael Lewis has written The Big Short. He's written Moneyball. This book is called The Premonition, and it's about the U.S.'s response to global pandemics and natural disasters, starting really about 20 years ago, and how that research and government regulation kind of led up to the COVID preparation. And it wasn't really a hit job on COVID, but it was a real behind the scenes look on who's in charge, who's not in charge, and what the actions of doctors, scientists, et cetera, across the country, the impact that they have either knowingly or unknowingly over really what was a generation of medical research. So really, really interesting book. And that's what I just wrapped up last night. Anyone else?
I'm not reading it, but I reopened 7 Habits of Highly Effective People because I bought a copy for my nephew who's got his first job out of college. And it was an eye-opening book for me, and I wanted to make sure how relevant it still was, and it still is.
So you've made it through 3 pages.
I have. I went to the shortcut.
The Cliff Notes. Yeah. Since my fall off the cliff of corporate life where I've completely unplugged, I've not been reading much, but I am making podcasts kind of a daily part of my life. And so I listen to The Journal every day, which is a podcast that The Wall Street Journal produces, which I absolutely love. And then also The Daily Show, which is a podcast that The Hustle does. The Hustle is a property that's owned by HubSpot. Between those two things, I get my daily fill, and that's how I've been kind of feeding my mind lately.
And of course, Background Check Radio is at the top of the list, right?
Right.
Yeah. I listened to that too. Very informative.
Bianca, anything, or are we ready to dive in?
Little known fact about me, guys, I read a lot of fantasy books, like sci-fi and
nice. Love it.
And so me and my husband are huge nerds. And so I'm listening to, because I don't actually read, haven't read in a solid decade, but I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and I'm listening to a great series by Pirate Abba. Highly recommend if anybody's a nerd out there. And sound off in the comments if you are. Like, you're nerds unite, you know?
Love it. Well, we're 3 minutes in. Let's dive in.
Yeah.
Let's hit it.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Again, if you are here in the right place, iCubed is presenting a webinar today about just a little bit of a Q1, but call it even like an H1 recap of this, you know, last quarter and everything that's happened so far in the industry. And they're just kind of looking ahead and what maybe 2025 looks like. Today's webinar is sponsored by CRI, and you'll hear a little bit more about them as we move on. You can know our faces. I don't think we need to do too much of an introduction, but Nick, welcome back to the webinar life. Webinar Nick has joined us today.
It's been a long time. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Hopefully I can get back on the horse and not mess up too badly.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I tell you, four of us with an open microphone absolutely terrifies me.
Yeah, it does.
This might go on for 3.5 hours.
Yeah,
I mean, this could be like a TV, you know, opinion segment, Fox News, ESPN. We're all shouting over each other. Yeah. So really worried. I'll just say that at the start. Jason, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about us? Try and keep it to 30 seconds.
So we are iCubed Advisors. We are the only boutique consulting firm serving the background screening industry. We offer all kinds of services, but our main services are obviously M&A advisory. We do a lot of recruiting, expert witness work. We've done a lot of, actually recently we were asked to speak at the TazWorks annual conference, which was a great success. So if you have conferences coming up, you're looking for a speaker or somebody to talk to your clients about the industry, that's another thing that we do. But we're really here to help you and background screening companies and the supply chain grow their businesses.
Love it. And I want to thank CRI Criminal Research and Investigations for sponsoring today's webinar. CRI is your nationwide provider and background screening expert. They're proud to offer coverage across the U.S. and Puerto Rico with faster turnaround time and more accurate results than their larger competitors. They serve CRAs both large and small and pride themselves on attention to quality, their partnership-centric approach, five-star service, and detailed knowledge of court systems nationwide. So if you'd like to learn more about CRI, contact Stacy Laird, that's S-L-A-I-R-D, at CRIscreening.com. All right, let's dive in. So we have a lot of content for you today. We are going to run right up through the top of the hour. We're going to sprint through a lot of things, current economic outlook, some of the indicators that we're tracking for quarter two and beyond. CFPB recently rescinded some guidance advisory letters and notices within the last few weeks. We have some thoughts on that and PBSA's involvement, not only in that process, but in other things, sharing information and guidance throughout our industry. They've done a nice job with that in the last week or two. We have some nuggets and items of intelligence that come from our research that we always like to share every time we get a chance to speak with you guys. Some marketplace moves, things that we're seeing within the industry, individual people, individual companies, and then Q&A, but of course, like we always do, throw your questions in. We'll get to as many of them live as we can. We'll answer them within the flow of the conversation. And again, really excited you're here. You could do anything with your day and you chose to be here. So let's dive in right now. Give everybody a second to kind of absorb what they have on the screen. Our first negative quarter of economic growth in about 2.5 years. And you know, something that I just always like to remind not only me, but anytime we have an opportunity like this, you know, there is a cyclical style to recessions. And we've had two in the last 15 to 20 years, and the financial crisis, and then obviously around COVID. Unemployment holding steady. Inflation did rise about 25% from the previous quarter. And some data on just the number of working Americans and monthly jobs report. Quarterly hires. Nick, Bianca, Jason, anything that kind of jumps out here that either surprises or doesn't surprise you?
Yeah, well, I've got a few things. as far as the negative economic growth, that is an accurate statement, but it has to be taken with a grain of salt. And the reason for that is, and I'm sure we were not going to get through much of this podcast without mentioning the big T word, tariffs. Everybody was anticipating those. And as a result of anticipating those tariffs, they started importing as many things as they possibly could to get in front of that.
Yes.
That actually negatively affects GDP. And so while the economy is certainly not humming, and nobody would say that it is, the fact that we had negative economic growth, a lot of that can be attributed to the incredible amount of imports that we brought in over the course of the first quarter.
Two quarters of that is a real recession, correct? So it's like, I think it's two quarters in a row of negative GDP growth. So if we have another quarter of it, then it's...
By technical definition, yes, any two quarters of negative growth. But again, I think that these things are, they have to be measured not by the textbook definition of what things are anymore, because there are so many contributing factors to them. And I'm not necessarily a cheerleader for what's going on in the economy, but I do think all of those things need to be factored in before somebody throws up a flag and says, oh, this is a recession or it's not. As far as employment is concerned, it's actually in pretty good shape, better than I would have thought that it would be at this point. There's still job creation. It's not a ton. But I think the most promising thing to me is that we're not seeing a ton of layoffs during this time period. And so I think that that's good news. Job churn is, you know, not very good right now. There aren't a lot of people job hopping. I think it's safe to say that this is an employer's market, not an employee's market anymore. I think those are all important factors to bear in mind.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the last recession being 2020, which it's kind of hard to call a recession because it was more like artificial because of COVID. You know, usually you kind of come out of these recessions and you have growth for several years. I think that one was kind of artificial, which affected the unemployment rate at that time. I think the unemployment rate is going to stay pretty steady until we have a massive AI impact on jobs. Which is, you know, it's coming. But at the same time, during 2020, companies got really good at being lean and mean. So it's really, I think it depends on where we see the unemployment numbers coming out of that with the AI impact on that to truly determine where we're going to be.
Yeah. I'll just say that I think, like, from really like an emotional and almost like a perception standpoint, like that's where all these things start to really matter, and where, you know, even if the technicalities don't quite fit in or whatever else, the way we feel about when we think about the economy is the number one factor that affects buying behavior, consumer behavior, investment behavior. And for, you know, our industry specifically, you know, can kind of freeze companies to make bigger decisions or more risky decisions when there is so much uncertainty. And really, frankly, since COVID, that's been ongoing in our world, right? Where are we growing? Are we not growing? Or like, is there another recession? Is there not? So I think, you know, perception wise and like all the factors that go into it, you know, the optimism isn't strong right now, I think. And that is just probably, you know, affecting people in terms of, yeah, we're people are staying in their jobs, employers are being really picky about who they are hiring and things like that. So yeah, the perception I think is tempered, but not necessarily entirely negative, certainly not entirely
obvious. Yeah, I mean, look, you nailed it, and I think you hit it on the head here. You know, business and consumer sentiment is down. It's way down. And a lot of that is what drives the behavior. The uncertainty, by the way, is what's driving that sentiment. And so, you know, Kevin, as I read through a lot of the statistics that you sent over about postings being up, they might be up, but what I am hearing a lot about and seeing is that the time to hire is slowing down significantly. People are going through 10 interviews in order to get a job. Or companies will post something, but they never make the hire on it. I think that has to be factored in as well.
Yeah, and it's a good segue kind of into what we see for this quarter and beyond. And, you know, Q4 inflation was 2.4. There was an indicator at 3.5 for Q1 of this year.
Hey, Kevin, really quickly, before we jump off into the next topic, let's at least give some points of light as far as where there was good hiring in the first
quarter. Yeah, talk about the sectors.
Yeah. So, you know, from everything I'm reading, healthcare, finance, transportation, and warehousing were the big winners in Q1. So, you know, CRAs that have clientele that are in those industries probably did better than others.
Do you guys think that we come out of these recessions faster now and in the future because the flow of information is so much quicker than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago? And decisions are being made with real data instead of more, you know, theoretical stuff.
Or it's artificially being managed. You know, the Fed has so much power to be able to manage these things. interest rates, things like that, how much they how much they flood the market, you know, with money. I think in many ways they've stopped recessions from happening quite a bit, but they might have elongated how long we go between real major growth. I that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's probably true to some degree, but I think what's also strongly true. Did you hear guys hear that?
Don't worry, I wrote it down. Is that with an ER, strongly?
It's strongly. What? Okay, I can't even spell it. Anyway, right. I'm just making up words over here. I think our emotional reactivity too, right? Like we are the news cycle and everything else. And so we are impacting things really quickly as well. And so it's hard to say the chicken or the egg, but I think probably both are true, is that like there's a lot of reaction, real time understanding, like, of course, you know, for better or worse, like maybe it's a good thing sometimes, maybe it's a bad thing sometimes, you know,
strongly
feel that way.
We're generally in, I think, and part of it is by definition, the work that we do, a glass half full environment. Everybody's looking around the corner for risk. Everybody's looking around the corner for the shoe to drop or the banana peel that they're going to slip on. What surprises me now, and you see my little plan, words here, tariff, no tariff, like words move markets. Bianca, you said it really well a couple of minutes ago. We talked about the economic uncertainty, and just if business leaders and owners don't have clarity, if they don't know what the rules are you probably going to be more aggressive? Are you going to be more conservative? Are you going to take a chance? Or are you going to play it safe? And I guess what's surprising me right now is I'm not hearing CRAs saying, oh man, I'm concerned about the future, or, oh, I'm worried, because, you know, we are a leading indicator. We will see volume changes first. And it's a pretty logical leap for me to see that, you know, uncertainty is just bad. Uncertainty is bad for the market. Uncertainty is bad for hiring, and uncertainty is bad for us as CRAs. So I think, you know, the ability to forecast your business is extremely important. Are you forecasting in a stable environment or an unstable environment? And my point right now is we're just in an unstable environment. So anyone who thinks they know what the next 3 to 6 months is going to be like, I think, you know, they're certainly smarter than I.
Right. You want to know what the rest of this year looks like for this industry? Tell me what's going to happen with the tariffs. I personally believe that there was a big wake up call with the big shock and awe of what was instituted. What was it, April 1st, somewhere around there? I would like to believe that we have learned from that. And that everything from here is going to be a negotiated settlement that leads to better things. I think it's really important to look at, and I know we're going to talk about the performance of the industry here shortly, but people perform pretty well in our industry generally in the first quarter of this year.
Yes. Yeah.
They did, but they also forecasted lightly. They were forecasting on the tail of what they saw in Q4 of 2024 and realized you're not going to go from down here to up here that quickly. What they did do, though, is they pushed a lot of their more aggressive forecasting into Q2, Q3, and Q4. And so I think it will be very interesting to see if these organizations can continue to hit their numbers as we go through. And I really do think things like tariffs and the reaction to the tariffs are going to dictate whether people are hitting their forecasts or not.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jason.
I agree with you. I had a really great conversation this weekend with a guy that works at one of the huge financial firms. And I was just, you know, picking his brain about what's going on in the tariffs and everything else. And he's kind of echoing what I've been hearing from others, that the worst is behind us, that everything going forward will be a deliberate negotiation. But what we don't know is the uncertainty of, you know, does China just decide that they're kind of pissed that we did this in the first place and retaliate some way, somehow. So I think there's still a lot of uncertainty with what the others are going to do leading up to the 90-day tariff shutoff. So,
yeah, well, I'm hoping everybody saw mutually assured destruction out of what happened at the beginning, and that the retaliatory stuff hopefully everybody's called each other's bluffs at this point. We'll see.
Yeah, the biggest effect on the industry would have been if they would have included services in the tariffs. I mean, then every background screening company that offshores would have been in a really difficult position.
Oh, can you imagine?
I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. That's an interesting.
Yeah, there was a carve out. There was a carve out for service based industries, but that, you know, if that changed, that would be catastrophic.
All right, let's pivot to some language. Let's pivot to the CFPB. PBSA did a great webinar. I believe it was last week where they put together a panel that kind of shared within the industry, hey, what happened? What does it mean? What does it not mean? I know, Jason and Nick, you guys weren't on the webinar. I was able to listen to it, took some notes. But, you know, news comes out of Washington, new administration, taking a lot of notices, opinion letters, guidance, and just saying, nope, this doesn't apply. We're withdrawing it. What do you see the impact of that through our space?
Well, I mean, the data broker
I'll start with data brokers because that's really important.
The data broker part is the only thing that I really paid attention to, and they pulled that off the table. That would have had another catastrophic impact on the industry. And in a nutshell, it would have required companies like Equifax and Informed Data and others to validate the information before they even send it to us.
Yeah. Essentially, it'd make them CRAs.
Right.
You'd have multiple CRAs selling a report. That would have been insane.
Yep. So that being gone is a good thing. I mean, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, the CFPB is not going to enforce the FCRA anymore. And that might be true. That doesn't relieve you of your obligations, and it doesn't relieve you of the liability of plaintiff's counsel going after you. So that part of it doesn't really impact CRAs if they're running their businesses appropriately. And, you know, they're still going to follow the FCRA.
Yeah. To me, it I've never been a fan of CFPB. And the biggest reason I've never been a fan, I'm all for consumer protection, but I think they overreached. And they were judge, jury, and executioner for everything. They were completely unchecked. I think the FTC did a fine job at regulating the industry, of enforcing their rules, jumping in when they had to. But there was an aggressiveness with CFPB that I just didn't care for in a bureaucracy. Again, as far as protections for consumers, they're there. I would argue that they were there before the CFPB got involved, and they'll be there after they're gone. So to me, this is a positive development. But as Jason was saying before, it doesn't change the fact that we still have obligations. It doesn't change the fact that there is still the FCRA that will be enforced. And in many ways, what some things like this often do, when you see more lax policy, you see the states taking matters into their own hands and developing more laws in that regard. And I think you're going to see more of that as a result.
I'll just say that I think it's a really good time for, especially maybe CRAs or some smaller businesses or really any size, but it's a good time for maybe a compliance checkup with a consultant or something. And it's actually one of the things iCubed we don't do, but there are some really great ones in the industry.
We're like, working on it.
Not our thing.
Yeah. I've got somebody on the line right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there are any in the room with us, shout out in the comments, honestly, throw yourselves out there, because I think there's a lot of just questions and you're trying to catch up and you're trying to run your business and you're trying to keep up on this stuff. And just to kind of, you know, wrap your head around really well what these states are doing, anything that does change. I know there's some stuff popping up with California right now, as ever. So I don't know. I just put myself in a position of running that company again. And you need a really good resource. In addition to, of course, the educational information that PBSA puts out to sort of digest it for you and for your personal, for your particular business. This is all just giving, get some help, obviously the lawyers in the room, not trying to sidestep you at all, but there is something to be said about getting in the operational weeds with you, with somebody who can partner with you really well. So that's my recommendation.
And there's a comment for Melissa. And I think I agree. I think Melissa is a wonderful resource for our space. I'd like to see, because I have a question for the audience, and just throw it in yes, no. It's an easy question. Is the CFPB guidance useful for you? Like, do you learn something that you didn't know, or are you changing practices because of it? And I ask the question for this reason. If you're an accredited company and you adhere to the PBSA standards, you're really already doing these things. And something I think of right now, and Nick's point is great, right? There's two ways a CRA can get hit, the regulatory side or the litigation side, right? Just to kind of simplify the conversation. Litigation doesn't go away, doesn't change. Like there's still that chance. And you know, the example that comes to mind is about 2 years ago, CFPB guidance on name match only. Well, FCRA says we have an obligation to ensure maximum possible accuracy and use reasonable procedures, et cetera. Name match only isn't it. Like it's not. And inside of a CRA, you have to decide, are you selling a product? Are you selling a process? If your process is, I'm going to do the search this way, and if it ends in a name match only, well, that's a little different than being like, okay, my product is this, and name match only is not enough for me. So I see something like name match only as guidance and then withdrawn guidance. And I think to myself, man, if that is like the big thing that matters to you when you either learned or didn't learn something because of it, I think you have other problems in your business. So, I agree with a lot of the things that Nick said and just wonder, like, okay, that guidance isn't there, but the regulatory or the litigation risk still is. Let's just move on and run our business the way that we know we need to, especially the accredited companies, because I think they already follow many of those principles anyways.
Yeah, I think the answer is like maybe we don't know. You know, I mean, what you do know for sure is that like you need somebody completely focused on this, and even, you know, mature companies that have a department of compliance people, it's a very tricky thing, right? To keep up on all the things and all the changes. And when you don't have a department, when you don't even have like a person doing it, all the more, right? And yeah, a lot of people choose to ignore these things until there's a fire. And that can be unfortunate.
We got a comment, and it's a good comment, and a kind of I'll paraphrase it is, it gives us some cover. It gives us cover to kind of work with our clients and urge, recommend change, et cetera. That's a really valid point. I understand that. State and local access. I think Jace or maybe Bianca mentioned it a little while ago. PBSA is, of course, very active, very communicative, reaches out to members with contact information for the appropriate legislators, regulators, et cetera. I shared a hot take last week when we kind of ran through
Yeah,
our
you've got
notes.
the most passion about this. Why don't you talk about it?
Yeah, so it's a question for the group, and I think the group's going to hate me. The comments are going to roll in, but I have long been frustrated, and this is like a 10, 15-year level of frustration. It seems like we're the only ones. Date of birth access, public record access, et cetera. It seems like the background screening industry is the only one I hear advocating for this stuff. I don't hear HR groups. I don't hear SHRM. I don't hear Sunshine Law advocates, open record, access. I don't hear that. And I kind of wonder, like, is there a natural point where we as CRAs are like, hey, sorry, client XYZ, the state of California did this or the state of Michigan did this, and like, here's what I can do. And much like my comments around the CFPB, like there's other things that you need to do to protect and grow your business. And I just wonder if there's like a natural stopping point, or will somebody else join the fight? Because I
Yeah,
feel like we're the only
it's
ones
really
there.
frustrating. I agree with you. You know, one of the things that we used to before there was even an NAPBS, you know, the one organization that we could always rely on when it came to First Amendment things was the journalists. You know, the journalism lobby would fight tooth and nail for anything that was rescinded or re redacted from public record. And I haven't seen them doing anything about this. Now, that doesn't mean it's not happening. I just haven't seen it.
Call it out,
But
Jason. Who is it that you'd like to call out?
no, I don't want to call
I
anybody
know
out,
you
but
got in trouble for it the last time you did. I think you should do it again.
I do think that PBSA should align themselves with these organizations to help, and not only with the organizations, but also encouraging our end users, our clients, to push it forward as well in those states, really better aligning ourselves with those organizations, with that organization.
I'll call it out. I actually don't think it's PBSA's fault. I do like that PBSA. Like, I looked and I saw recently they're going back to the state of California and trying to open that back up. What I was referring to, and only halfway joking with you, is sure, be a great advocate for this industry, and they've disappeared on these issues.
Guys, why do you think that is?
I don't know.
I have a suggestion.
But it's maybe because they're not hearing from their HR constituency that these are important issues to them.
That's right. We got other problems, my friends. And when you're running a business right now, and this economy and that uncertainty, whatever else, things fall off the prioritization list. And you are playing a game where you're trying to be a priority that is simply not one at the moment, right? Like, the winds have changed, and the sentiment around, you know, criminal history and the length of which we can impose that information in an employment decision, there's the winds have changed. And so we're not that concerned if, there are some holes there, essentially. Well, I think some are prompted in terms of, like, you know, end users are willing to take more risks than CRAs and data providers are. And that's what it comes down to. Like, when you're running any business, right, there's a cost benefit, there's a risk association. And so some of these things, I think, just the sentiment and the consumer sentiment that we're going back to tie back to the economy, they're really distracted with other things right now. And so they're willing to kind of be like, we'll take a chance and just work it out, guys. You guys work it out and fix it for us, because I don't know. I'm sure there are real problems, but it's just not this is not what I do as a company.
I don't disagree with that. I think you're right, but they care about it when it hits them, not before it hits them. The impact. When California all of a sudden stops, when they start stripping personal identifiers off of court records, or Michigan does it, our clients don't feel it until it actually gets implemented.
Right.
And then they feel it big time. And so I think there is a disconnect between when something is announced and when somebody feels it. And I think that we have to do a better job of an organization of letting our clients know the impact this is actually going to have and making it important to them.
But I'm glad you've said it, like PBSA is doing a wonderful job on this. And I realize a lot of my frustrations are to people that are outside of this webinar. They're not listening, right?
Yeah.
But Nick, to your point, aren't we kind of doing too much of it already?
If we stop doing it, then who's going to do it? Somebody has to do it. And by the way, if you all of a sudden become, if you become deaf to these issues, then they really start piling up. And what happens to your industry when something like that happens? What happens if every state in the country all of a sudden decides they're going to remove identifiers off records? What kind of an industry are we going to have?
So it's that stuff I can get behind. It's that stuff. And we're not self-serving on this, and I don't mean the four of us here. But that is a, hey, I need to protect my house. This is why I care about this. That's something I can totally get behind. But
listen, I used to remember Barry Nadell. And I know I'm going way back, and there are probably like five people on this call that are going to remember Barry Nadell. Great guy. But he used to talk about the polygraph industry and how overnight they were legislated out of business because they didn't have anybody advocating on behalf of the organization. Now, maybe polygraphy was good. Maybe it was bad. I don't know. But there was nobody fighting. And literally, these people that had these businesses built up on doing polygraphs were out of business in one day. If we don't actually start doing that. Ha! David Nadell, by the way, remembers his father. Yeah. David, that was fantastic.
And of course, that's genesis for the development of PBSA. And
listen, we all had a front row seat to that. I always remember Barry talking about that, and that's why we need to care about these issues.
And I think what you're describing, Nick, is a marketing problem more than like a passion problem, right? Like it's like maybe we need to shift the messaging to resonate with people in a way that it's just simply not, because you can advocate and you can shout all day long, but does it change the outcome if you're not like moving people's behaviors, right? And so yeah, I mean, there much more just we could do a whole webinar probably on that, and it's just like how can we, you know, tie these problems to very real world things. And it's a bit like, you know, as we all know, like selling insurance, right? You're trying to prevent something that hasn't happened yet, and that kind of buyer mentality, like it really has to be more visceral for them. And so anyway, I mean, you're describing a marketing problem, and as a marketing genius, Nick, tell us how to solve
If I were a marketing
it.
genius, perhaps I'd be able to tell you, but
And I guess that's kind of where I land. Like, I'm not angry at anybody. I'm just frustrated. I
Well, we
feel like,
also don't know, we also don't know the efforts they've put forward. I mean, we see the results, we don't see if they've tried, if they've, you know, if they've partnered or whatever. The results, though, have been negligible.
yeah, I just, I see a lot of really hard work on this. But I also think sometimes we're like Sisyphus, we keep pushing the rock up the hill. Like, I didn't think I'd be talking about Greek mythology today. But I view everything through the lens of opportunity cost. And I wonder as a business, so here's kind of the crux of what I'm thinking about. And I'm thinking of the 200 CRAs that are lower than $10 million in annual revenue. And I'm thinking to myself, it's like, we got six things in front of us. And yes, California date of birth stuff, like it all frustrates us and bothers us. But are we using our time, our energy as effectively as we can relative to the other business problems we have to solve? So it's a mix of opportunity cost plus why are we the only ones who care? Rant
Ever,
over.
ever the golden ratio of running a business. That's exactly what you just said, Kevin. How about okay, we need before we all, you know, just like storm off and turn red and steam comes out of our heads, especially Kevin. I think you got it off your chest, Kevin. I think you feel good. Another word from our sponsor, Kevin.
I would love to change topics and talk about something a little happier. So, CRI, of course, offering criminal, civil, statewide, federal, and tax lien solutions. Criminal Research Investigations combines technology with boots-on-the-ground court researchers to best serve their clients. With fast turnaround time and top-notch support, they cover Puerto Rico as well as all 50 states, providing detailed knowledge of different jurisdictions across the country. Again, if you're interested in learning more, please contact Stacy Laird, Slaird, at CRI Screening.
Kevin, could you actually put Stacy's email in the chat? I forgot to
Yes. Well,
post it on here, but that would be really, really helpful.
yes.
But don't mean to distract you, because before
No.
or after you do that, Kevin, tell us what these numbers mean. What's going on
So
here?
yeah, normally I try and do two things at once. I don't do either of them well. So we have five numbers here, and this is kind of a lead into some of the intelligence that we wanted to share with you. 15, 90, 50 equaling one, and what was the last one? 25.
Yeah.
This is what it is. We constantly scour and report and research and analyze CRAs in our space that derive most of their business revenue through screening. So we're not talking about the PI that could do a background check if you wanted to. We talk about companies that just do this. And I cut 15 companies off the list in our recent sweep. They've just closed their doors. That is indicative of two things. One, the really long tail in our business. I mentioned before, 200 companies plus or minus with revenues under $10 million. That number's probably actually higher rather than lower. A lot of lifestyle business, a lot of single shop owners, single employee owners who just decided, okay, I'm done. Not an exit, not an M&A. They just stopped existing. Thought that'd be interesting to share with the space. 90% of the revenue in the screening industry runs through accredited CRAs. There are about plus or minus 125 CRAs in our space that are accredited. Nine of every $10 spent on background checks runs through them.
That is not a coincidence.
Yep. Half of the CRAs, 1% of the market. 200 CRAs, 1% of the screening market, which we estimate at $5.7 billion. And then First Advantage, as a result of their acquisition of Sterling, now owns about a quarter of all those screening dollars. Guys, what jumps out at you? Any surprises?
No, just one point I want to make about accreditation. You know, I do a lot of expert witness work. I've had two trials in the last 3 weeks, and accreditation is always a part of the deposition or trial every single time. So if you're not accredited, it's definitely something you want to work towards, because it will be something there'll be a gotcha on any lawsuit.
Yeah. And there was a conversation about accreditation in the chat, so you guys scroll through if that rings a bell to you. I would say that like the 15 series that have closed their doors, like I can't decide if I think that's too many or too little, because of just like the activity and just kind of seeing the way this is going and the sucking of the consolidation, so to speak. So, and it's complicated to shutter your business. It's complicated. It's not something that you just close the doors and that's it, you know, and there's a lot of motions that you need to go through before you do that. And so, you know, I just think that if there's any businesses that are feeling like you're teeter-tottering on that option, really, really consider like finding a way to find an exit strategy. And I guarantee you can get some value out of your business, because this is it's a complicated thing and it's a very emotional decision. But you know, I think this trend is going to very much continue.
I think the... I think I lost my train of thought. Oh no. I think that the number is probably low. And I'll tell you why. I think the number is low
because of CRAs that have closed their doors.
Yes.
I agree. I think it's low too.
Because they say, and I don't know if this stat is valid anymore, but 99% of businesses fail in the first year and like another 50% fail in the second and third year. So is this surprising? No, I kind of think the number is probably a little bit higher. And there's probably a bunch of other companies that started up before they even joined PBSA. And never joined PBSA and just close your doors before all that happens. So the number's probably double, triple that.
Yeah, there's a limit, because we get asked this question all the time. We got it like a week or two ago. Like, oh, I thought there were 1,000 companies. Like, again, that tail is so long. We track 362 of them because that is really the screening market.
Yep.
But that tail can go forever. So I'd agree with Nick and Jason on the real numbers. Probably like if we track 600 instead of 400, yeah, I'd probably report 37 closed instead of 15 closed.
Right. But so let's take this with I keep saying grain of salt. Let's just parse this a little bit more. Of the 350 companies that we're watching, and we're watching the ones that we know are doing, call it legitimate revenue inside of the background screening space, you know, 15 is that they were legitimate CRAs that were doing business. Now they're probably small. But I also agree that if we were measuring a larger portion, we get a much bigger number.
Yeah. And you know, a couple of questions about some of the common attributes and Jason, to your point, right? And what our research has found is almost the opposite, right? It's not the company that said in April of last year, I want to be a background screener, and 11 months later, they just folded up. It is really what I've called for a number of years now. I call it the bachelor to grandfather life cycle of business owners in our space. The criminal justice, law enforcement, early 2000s, this is a good business to be in. And now you're 70 years old and you know, so it's not newbies who come in with money and technology and ambition who flame out. It's the reverse. And there's no judgment here, right? There are hundreds of companies in our industry, just what, like I described, that are doing nice business and they have a comfortable life and they're making the money they want to make. And that is phenomenal for them. But when we think about kind of the attributes of those businesses, they're the ones for whom they've just run out of gas.
Yeah. And that's 4% of the companies we track again, right? Like it's not necessarily the entire, you know, market, but I mean, 4% isn't nothing, you know, it's not statistically insignificant in terms of just, you know, comparing to the actual numbers you're looking at 400.
We should do a whole podcast on why background screening companies go out of business and all the
Yes.
reasons.
Yes. Yes,
I mean,
yes, yes.
I've got a ton of notes here. Just we're not going to cover this today, but just on, you know, how the model of business and business funding is broken, and it's been broken for like the last several years. The way private equity works and venture capital works has been broken. And you have a whole generation of business owners that are and entrepreneurs that are getting into business that have no idea how to throw a profit. They're not interested in a profit. They're not interested in making money. They're interested in burning money. So I think it's a it's and then somebody's paying them 3 times revenue for that business that's worth nothing, which I also
Well,
don't
and I
understand.
think that that's what a lot of them are finding too. Those businesses are worth nothing right now.
Yeah. That's
I
why I say the
mean,
model's
Jason,
broken.
we've been looking at them, right? We've
Yep.
seen
Well
them.
said.
Yep. It's a
Well
good
said.
question. And I mean, Lisa brought this up, but it's like those 15 or lifestyle businesses, like is background screening an available lifestyle business anymore?
Not like it was before.
Yeah.
Yes, I
You
think
can't just bring in customers and coast. I
right.
mean,
Because you're
anybody
it's a
that's
decent
doing
question to
that
have
right
on our
now.
next webinar.
What's your goal?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. I have a big one I want to talk about. I don't even know if this is an appropriate time or not, but this is my passion project. This is the thing that I care most about with this industry. Look, you're showing First Advantage has a 25% market share. That's huge. Let's go even further. Seven companies in this industry make up 75% of all the revenue that is going on right now. The middle market is dying. Why aren't other CRAs stepping up? What's going on there? This is a perfect opportunity. Jason, we started Employee Screen IQ based on this principle. That's what was going on then too. And we were able to convince enough people that they didn't need to be with IBM anymore. Why isn't this going on?
It's what I told you this morning.
I
This
agree.
industry sucks at sales and marketing. And
Ah.
that's going to be a topic of a blog series and webinar
Yeah.
that we're going to do because this
Well,
industry
who
sucks
wants
at it.
to do? Who wants to do? No offense, Nick. Like, what's sexy about background check marketing? And
Nothing.
I
Nothing.
asked
But
that question,
do it. Do it and clients will come.
but I asked the
Right.
question partly tongue in cheek because. And again, it's a chicken and an egg. You look at those couple hundred companies that are smaller in our space, they're not really doing outside marketing. They're not making an investment in it. They have somebody doing it in the afternoons who's also a processor in the morning. Like, that's not marketing. So
Exactly.
to me, when we think of day-long seminars on this stuff, it's allocation of labor. It's I don't want to say unwillingness because I'm trying to be nicer. It's a strategic lack of focus on how to best use the dollars that you are spending.
Is it a lack of knowledge or is it an unwillingness? I don't know. I mean, I listen,
I've been
this is
cranky, so
easy.
I've been cranky
This
all
is
day. I'm trying to
shooting
stay
fish in a
practical.
barrel. Go market yourself. Go find differentiators. Go talk about the big bad wolf out there because it's out there and there is plenty of business that falls out. I don't get it.
A couple year about 2 years ago, I ran an analysis of not only company attributes like what they are touting. So I'm touting service. I'm touting turnaround time. I'm touting technology, right? And most companies fell into the exact same buckets with what they were telling the market. By the way, I do not think touting accuracy gets you anything. I think that is built in. I think that is
Table stakes.
expected. Yeah,
Turnaround
yeah.
time,
Saying I'm
price,
accurate, like
quality,
bring me a
accuracy,
business.
those are table stakes. You've got
My
to find a
better
different way to
point.
differentiate yourself.
The point I want to make here, if you look at company names, screening, background, check, criminal, like hundreds of companies that are named very similarly. I'm not telling everybody to do a rebrand right away, but I'm saying I think there's a space if you got a generic sounding name, right? Remember, what was our original name, guys? Background Information Services.
Yep.
Named by
Yep.
one Jason B. Morris.
Yeah, we moved off it. For right reason, but just there's opportunity and
Yeah,
like that's
Employee
as
Screen
bland
IQ
a
was not
company
the
name as
greatest
you can
name in the
get.
world, by the way. So nobody should think we're patting ourselves on the back.
Yeah, super bland, super bland. So, anyways, another notable nugget I'll share before we pivot to market moves. proprietary revenue on proprietary systems, revenue on platform systems, 80-20. 20% of screening revenue runs through off-the-shelf platforms, the ones we'll see at PBSA. 80% runs through proprietary systems, and that melds well with Nick's comment around, you know, a half dozen or so CRAs with two-thirds to three-quarters of the market share. I wanted to share that. Okay. I'll share some of the first advantage stuff in a second, but what are you guys seeing? New people, new acquisitions, leadership changes? Jason, you had some good notes on that.
Yeah. So recently, ClearChecks, which was a smaller CRA out of Colorado, was acquired by HireRight, and it looks like they are going to be the SMB arm of HireRight under the backgroundchecks.com title or name.
The good hire, the this decade's good hire.
Yes.
Which I think is a really cool concept.
DISA has acquired American Data Bank. That's going to push them in further into the student and nursing and healthcare areas. And they've got a lot of plans for that, a lot of really cool plans that will really differentiate them from everybody else. A new CEO at Sisive. Larry left for personal reasons, and they brought in somebody from their board to act as CEO in the interim. And this one is not on the list, but it just recently happened, and I see he's on the webinar, so I'll give him a shout out. Adam Townsend is the new CEO of Infomart.
Yeah, congrats, Adam. That's very well deserved.
Congrats, Adam. Yep.
Congrats.
That's all I have as far as movers and shakers. You guys have anything else there?
No, I think you covered most of them. First Advantage recorded quarterly earnings of about $355 million. They are, and part of this is from memory, guidance and growth for the rest of the year. They have, according to their last earnings call, kind of think second half of 2025 is going to be stronger than the first half of 2025. I always like looking at the filings to see the breakdown of business and opportunities that comes really from a couple different ways. Your existing company, your existing client base, which we'll just call base growth, right? Is it increasing? Is it decreasing? You have to subtract client churn out of that, any client defections. Then you look at new logos and then upsells and cross-sells, which we continue to be very, very bullish on. We have solutions available to end users that are not just in the pre-hire space. They're just not in talent acquisition and recruiting. Some of the more sophisticated companies in our space are doing a better job kind of capturing and leveraging that. And I think for any CRA looking to grow, there's a decent 5%-10% revenue bump with a committed campaign to do exactly that. One thing I did notice in their earnings, right? So you have, you know, you have what's called gross retention. Gross retention is like, hey, that company was a client last year, they still a client this year. Well, yeah, you know, that's usually for sophisticated companies going to be 90-95%. Both Sterling and First Advantage were reporting, you know, negative growth 5%, 8%, 10% from that base. So again, I'm not a financial analyst. I'm not an economist. We just play it on webinars like this, but it's a really good mix, and it's an insight of where kind of money comes from in your business and where it leaks out. You can retain your clients, and if they have a bad year, then your retained revenue drops. I've retained the client, but the revenue drops. How do you offset it with new logos and cross-sell upsells? Where do sales and marketing come in as the drivers of our business?
Yeah, listen. First Advantage deserves credit for how they're managing their business right now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, their same store sales, to your point, are down. I don't remember, was it 8%, something in that name?
Yeah, combined probably
maybe
8%-10%.
that number's off. Where they're doing well is they are becoming more efficient. So they're on their expense side, they've become very efficient and cut costs significantly. And the other thing is that they are actually bringing in new customers. And so, you know, new business development during this time doesn't seem to be hurting them very badly. The one area where I anticipated they were going to stumble a little bit, certainly right out of the gates, is with client attrition. And we've heard a little bit of it, but we've only heard it anecdotally. And I think one of the reasons for that is we've heard that they've made a commitment to not migrate customers from one platform to another for right now. And you know, kudos to them for holding still on that, because that is what rattles customers and makes them want to switch.
Yeah, I think. I agree.
Go ahead, Jason.
I totally agree with all of that. The one thing that I haven't seen First Advantage talk about a lot recently, and I don't know if I haven't read their the report yet, but their tenant screening business should increase quite a bit over the next 5 years too. I'm wondering if you guys read anything about that in their reports, because with what I'm reading about multifamily housing, it should increase the use of tenant screening, especially in a slowdown economy.
Well, my former Informed Data colleagues are probably laughing right now at the tenant screening. That's an inside joke. But I would think that the CFPB developments actually help those in the tenant screening environment. I think that there was a real threat to that industry with some of the things that were going to go on. And hopefully this opens that market a little bit more than it already has been.
By threat to that industry, do you mean you actually have to spend a couple bucks to get something that's worth something and doesn't violate laws and prep? Yeah.
Yep. And that whole data brokers thing, I think was a big deal for that.
I only got so much love for that. Like, I get it, but like you can't get things for nothing. Nope. Something I had, what was I noticing, guys? So I wanted to share the industry breakdown of proprietary versus platform, which we did. Quick shout out, just as we're looking to wrap up, quick shout out to our colleague Andy Hellman, who is who's enjoying the Paris right now at the PBSA show. That's awesome for him. Final thoughts, guys, as we look to wrap up. I have a couple stats that I want to throw at the audience, but I have two.
That I wanted to make sure I got a chance to read. But one of them is, you know, the next 18 months with all this uncertainty is really going to separate the men from the boys when it comes to background screening companies and businesses. And there's going to be winners and losers in every revenue band that we track. There's going to be people falling out of the bottom, but moving up to the top and vice versa. So that'll be something to really pay attention to. The other thing is, and I've said this in so many different webinars, but because of the uncertainty, access to capital and cash is going to be that much more important for your business. You know, there's the old cliche that revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash is king. It's not only that cash is king, access to the cash is also king. So making sure that you have your banking relationships lined up right now for the next 18 months, making sure you're having those conversations with your bankers, because, you know, shit happens. And, you know, if you have a couple of months of downturn, that's going to affect your cash position quite a bit. So let's make sure that we're always keeping a keen eye on that.
My feeling is, if you're not one of those seven big CRAs that have 75% of the market share, history favors the bold. There is a significant opportunity for you out there right now. It doesn't mean that you need to go spend like a drunken sailor, but this is the time, and treading water is not an option.
No, we said it, you know, last webinar. First Advantage has $1.5 billion in revenue. They expect to lose 10% of that. There's $150 million in revenue that's trickling down, guys. So that's your opportunity to go get it.
Yeah, and I think my final thought is just something that Kevin said quite a bit, and I think is important to think about here in this uncertainty, is that what I'm seeing with the clients that we're working with is that the companies that are separating themselves out, that are doing more than treading water, they have really strong leadership, and they have really strong business acumen throughout their company. So we're talking from executive chairmen of the board down to the operator, you know, criminal researcher, what have you, right? And they are really making sure that that business acumen is transparent and is collective throughout their businesses. And this is size unspecific, right? And so I think, you know, again, to to pitch to consultants, but also just to really take a look at your company and be very self-aware if you got it or you don't. And if you don't got it, that's okay, because there are people that can help you. But I think that the separation here, when things are getting tighter and tighter, you know, uncertainty and whatever else, and like Nick said, treading water isn't an option. And if you think you're just going to survive by treading water, know that you need some push and some guidance and how to strengthen up your internal operations, not just in an operational sense, but your leadership and your ability to really make your company one that is working well together and using every resource you have throughout the organization towards your goals. So that's
I love that you brought that up, Bianca. So I'm going to fold that and a couple other things in my final thoughts. 89% of CRAs have fewer than 50 people on their staff. So when we talk about revenue, we talk about large companies and the long tail, that translates into people, right? If we think of people, you know, 90% of companies are really small businesses in our space. And to Bianca's point around leadership teams, we've adjusted the number of people that we consider employees in this industry at about 22,000. That's down about 3,000 or 4,000 from 4 years ago. Automation is coming. Technology is, I mean, it's already here, right? But it, like I said, maybe on our webinar early in the year, I see no reason for that number to get higher. I don't see a reason for there to be 30,000 people working at background check companies in 5 years. You know, that number's going to 15, I think, before it goes to 30. My point in saying that is, aside from automation and technology impact to labor, look at the management teams and the leadership that will shake loose and become available. I always try and compare businesses to sports teams. Nobody like finishes the season 500 as a sports team and says, well, I'm good enough. I'm going to just run it back next year. No, they always look to get better. They look to acquire new people, new talent. And that's one thing that I don't see enough of, and I really recommend that companies consider, is there are a lot of good people available that can do wonders for your business. And you couldn't get them 5 years ago, but you can get them now. I'm really excited for the companies that take the initiative there to strengthen their leadership teams.
Guys, and if you don't mind, everybody, I know everybody has to move on with their lives, but there are a few questions still here that we didn't get to. Anybody can take 3 minutes to see what we can answer. Sure. But, you know, everybody else, hey, listen, you got to go. Again, thank you to our sponsor, CRI. We'll try to, there's just a ton of questions in the chat here that I'm not sure we actually got to. Let me see if I can.
Yeah, let's run through them.
Yeah, let's run through. Let's see. Do you think there'll be blockbuster M&A activity this year, more on the smaller to medium scale?
Yes and yes. There's going to be one or two bigger deals before the end of the year, I'm sure. You'll continue to see some small, medium-sized ones, but not with the same momentum that we had a couple of years ago until things shake out with the economy.
And not what people were expecting either. Again, the interest rates being what they are, economic performance being what it is, I think it's certainly slowed down what many were predicting to be a pretty acquisitive year. Will there be more? Probably. What kind of acquisitions? Who knows? We'll see.
We talk about the 7 companies that have about 3/4 of the market, and you have 1 here and 6 over here. If I'm inside that 6, I have to feel really uncomfortable that there is 1 over here that has 25% of the market. So I have to imagine that 2 of these 6 are going to pair up. That's my prediction for this year.
Yeah.
Circling back really quick on those 15 that closed the doors, I believe they were a smaller size, right, Kevin?
Yes. Smaller and very legacy businesses, like haven't updated their web page in 9 years, kind of businesses.
Okay, but interesting. So smaller but tenured.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's bachelor to grandfather. Mm-hmm. It is not the new entrant that flamed out.
Yep.
Bachelor Gruffudger. On your criminal monitoring question, Jeff, I don't think we're actually qualified to answer that. I don't think any of us know about the specifics of what you're speaking about. But if anybody else does, please chime in. And then last one, what did I see? Oh, international question from Melissa. So Andy is working on building out much more of our international data. He's our international guru in Paris right now, living his best champagne dreams. That being said, guys, any other questions, please do shoot us our way. Our emails are on the screen there. Thank you again so much for bearing with us. We didn't do too bad, fellas. 2:03 or 12. Well, it's, you know, West Coast time. Pardon me. 12:03, 3 past the hour. Not too bad. Thank you all again. Please do visit iCubeAdvisors.com. Learn more about our services. Follow us on LinkedIn. We'll be clipping parts of this webinar. We'll be sending out the replay.
The good parts we'll be clipping.
Just the good parts, guys.
We got to include Strongerly. Strongly belongs on there.
All right, guys. Appreciate it all. Thank you for your time. Fellas, have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.